This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 26th of August, 2021. Yesterday, one of the markets that's been super quiet of late, heating up just a tad, and that is the sovereign bond market, with not so much the U.S., but especially Europe, seeing yields rising a bit. We'll get to what was driving that in a moment, but probably that was behind some of the patterns we saw in the U.S. equity market yesterday, as we saw the NASDAQ, it was up on the session and at new all-time highs, as was the S&P 500, but the NASDAQ 100 fading a bit relative to the highs in the cash session. So not a whole lot to pull away, Peter, and we're still at these new highs. It would take some quite a lot of selling to reverse this latest very sharp move, if you look at the NASDAQ 100 chart there on slide two. And then the mood somewhat worsening overnight as we saw Asia coming online. The big recovery we've seen in Chinese equities has faded a bit. And as well, South Korea out with a rate hike of 25 basis points. The market was not expecting that, and they cited financial stability risks as a key component of that decision, and raised their CPI forecast to 2.1%, so just north of their target. So I guess that's providing a bit of damper, the idea that central bankers are pulling away some of the support in places ahead of tomorrow's key speech from Fed Chair Powell at the Jackson Hole Conference. Peter, I'll let you take it away on other things you want to point out in the session overnight and into Asia.
Yeah, well, the market is just very quiet, as you mentioned, on the U.S. technology front. There's no really big things to take away from our theme basket performance, maybe except from the travel basket was finally having a good day. It's pretty broad travel basket we have. I think it's 40 or 50 stocks. So my takeaway from that is that if that's the best performer yesterday, that indicates that investors are getting, you know, more relaxed about the Delta and the longer term impact for travel. So I think that's a positive. And then you correctly say China was on the back foot. I mean, we down almost 6% in the Hang Seng Tech Index from yesterday's intraday high. And you had that South Korean interest rate hike, obviously. I don't think it impacts the Chinese market that much, because we have the People's Bank of China leaning the other way, having run very tight monetary conditions, are moving into a position where they want to losing the conditions. So I put in on slide four, you can see the Hang Seng technology index, it's down. I wrote a piece yesterday, is it time to buy these Chinese technology stocks? The short answer is no. The longer answer you can find in the article, but basically I'm arguing that along the lines of Cathie Wood from ARK Invest, she did a Bloomberg interview 2 days ago. Go for the companies that had minimal negative impact on the political power structure of China, and, you know, is seen as a net positive for where China's government and Xi Jinping wants China to go. So semiconductors, we'll talk about we'll talk about China's largest battery maker later in the podcast, because that's part of that story. JD.com as well. It's just a retailer, so it's not really engaged in big data and that. So, and then just a final point on the Chinese technology stocks. I put in one of the charts from the articles, the one in the upper right hand side of the slide. You can see that the forward valuation on the Hang Seng Tech Index versus NASDAQ 100 have now dipped into a discount from being in a premium for a long time. And you can see Facebook versus Tencent. Tencent has basically almost for a decade been mostly trading at a premium to Facebook. I think we're seeing a landslide change. There's a lot of foreign investors that are changing their view on Chinese technology stocks and pulling out. And I think it will take a long time, given this tail risk scenario we've just been through, to change that sentiment. So for me to change my stance on Chinese technology stocks, I would like to see the market build up a premium again. As long as we're in a discount, I think U.S. technology stocks will do better longer term.
Okay, and then just as a recap on the yield front, I discussed as a possible driver of some of the slight more caution in equity markets. Look at slide three, you can see the German Bund yield suddenly coming alive after quite a long period of indifferent trading. A decent rise in yield, sell-off in Bunds. Yesterday, a couple of ECB speakers out. So Vice President Windows talking about the risks of, the idea that the ECB would revise upward some of its macro forecasts at the September 9th meeting, the week after next. For whatever reason, that was seized upon more than rather offsetting comments from chief economist Lane, who was out saying it's too early to even discuss an end to the PEPP, so the pandemic emergency bond purchases, at the September meeting. So wanting to dampen any expectations that that issue would be visited at this meeting. So all in all, yields rising higher, and some of the later rise, the rise in the later part of the session was on U.S. Treasury yields also picking up. Still a little bit too early to, you know, draw too much attention to this, but we have seen a decent rise in yields here ahead of the Fed Chair Powell speech yesterday. And yesterday we saw a five-year Treasury auction where demand was a little bit anemic. It's at the about the same as the prior auction and still at the lower end of the longer-term range, even as foreign bidding interest was quite strong. So, you know, you see the chart there on slide 3 on the U.S. Treasury yields on the right. We still need to get above that local pivot there. That's just south of 140 basis points, and I would argue the 150 basis points area, which was sort of a battle zone on the way down back in June, would be a bigger indicator of something actually stirring in the U.S. Treasury market. We talked yesterday, by the way, I think it's a really important topic, not so much for right now, but as we work into the latter part of this year, as the Treasury will look to build back up a reserve of funds at the end of the year, once this, presumably, we get beyond the debt ceiling debate. But I guess, Ole, on the gold market, it's really disappointing. We saw a decent rally recently. It looked kind of promising, blasted above $1,800. But I guess it's this rise in yields and, you know, the dollar's helping as well. But I guess it's this rise in yields perhaps that is seeing gold just really not inspiring once again.
That's right, John. And as we can see on slide 7, the 200-day moving average just proved a not too hard to crack when we went above 1800 early in the week. You mentioned yields, and it's actually interesting just to note that the 7 basis point yield rise we've seen in the 10-year tenor over the last 3 days has all been driven by break-evens going up. The real yield is still hovering pretty unchanged here, just above negative 1%. At the same time, the dollar has also been stable. So I think most of that weakness in the gold we've seen is just cautiousness, not really driven by some of the other normal suspects. So just cautiousness ahead of tomorrow. So that could indicate that if we don't see any significant hawkish or gold bearish news, there could be a bounce lurking. But the sentiment is clearly on the nervous side here ahead of tomorrow. We got support in the band here below in the $75 to $80 area, which is the focus on the downside today. But also, I just added in another slide on slide 70, and that's basically just comparing the gold miners, the GDX, with the gold, but obviously also with the SPX and the S&P. And we've seen just this phenomenal underperformance now for the past year. Gold down around 8, a bit more than 8%. The miners are down to closer to 24%. And that's actually during a time where revenues has been picking up. Earnings forecast are looks relatively solid into 22. But it looks like historically miners is just doesn't seem to be the best bet relatively to gold. Have you got a view on that, Peter?
Yeah, we wrote a piece in late May last year where it's called "With a Positive Gold Outlook, Are Gold Miners Attractive?" questions. And we looked at the history, and as John correctly said before we went on the podcast, I mean, it was a good time, or it was a good idea from 2000 into the financial crisis, and actually a brief period after Great Financial Crisis, but around 2011, it peaked out, this MSCI All Country World Index, Gold Miners Index, and it has been a catastrophe ever since. And if you look at the performance against just gold spot, it's just, there's no reason to go for the miners. You get plenty of the good upside just being long the gold spot, and that negative carry on that gold spot is so minimal from storage that it's not even worth talking about. So yeah, you have to have a really, really good excuse to buy the gold miner instead of just putting the gold spot into your portfolio.
All right. I want to round out the FX space as we're heading into tomorrow's speech from Powell. We have essentially, if you look on slide five, you see that the trends, save for a couple of them where we still have a residual, for example, Aussie negative trend that was so pronounced that it's hard for a reversal to reach a significant magnitude to reverse that. But everywhere else, virtually, we're seeing these trends nearing indifferent or flat levels. So we're really looking at a pivot here. Are we going to pivot back into the former trends? So dollar upside, yen upside, Swiss upside, or are we going to break those trends, see a reversal there, and start to focus back on a, for example, commodity resurgence story, inflation story, maybe more pro-cyclical story for the FX space, which has not been in place now for quite some time? I don't have the answer, but it's really a critical couple of sessions here for establishing where we're headed trend-wise. And you can see on the Aussie dollar chart there, you saw that tremendous downward week last week. We've retraced a lot of it this week, but we haven't fully reversed that move. So a lot at stake, and certainly in FX, which was a lot more volatile around this recent episode of market volatility than we've seen in the recent past in foreign exchange. All right, we've got a couple. I'll let you guys fight for attention here. We've got your battery story, Peter, which I think is really interesting. The point you made on our little internal discussion earlier this morning. Let's go ahead and start with that, and I'll get back to you on weather and natural gas.
Yeah, we have a string of Chinese earnings releases this week, and one of them was CATL, the Contemporary Amphrex Technology Limited. So CATL is easier to say. They reported yesterday, and they just basically blasted estimates on both revenue and earnings per share. But like all other Chinese companies, they don't like to put out a guidance. So that's not apparently part of what they do. But we know the underlying trend of electric vehicles, both in China, the US, and Europe, is very strong. And as you can see, I've put in here, we are on slide six, by the way. So the share price of CATL has done extremely well since it was listed back in 2018. The table is the number, it's not the number, but the battery companies in our battery basket, which you can find on the Saxo Trader. And as you can see, CATL is by far the largest in market value, the largest battery producer in the world. And it produces batteries to all the Chinese, you know, EV makers, but also Tesla and Volkswagen recently have come to CATL and to get their batteries. And they also announced this morning on the earnings release that it's considering buying a stake in a Chinese company, pretty big one, a miner called Yinchuan Group, which is having it has three large cobalt and copper mines in the copper belt of Congo. So obviously it's trying to secure, I guess, resources or get an upper hand on the resource grabbing. So that's, again, the supply side story we've been talking about. Everyone is scrambling for raw materials. But what I said, John, and what you said was interesting is that CATL is one of these companies that, you know, is part of the drive for self-reliance and a technology leadership. And they are the leader in battery technology. And I think, unlike what we have seen with the technology companies, I think CATL can become, and also CATL is not a threat to the West as Huawei was. So I think actually CATL could be the crown jewel of China's, you know, future industry and become really one of the biggest companies in the world.
All right, interesting story to track there. And I guess they deliver. You mentioned they deliver batteries into Tesla, which is kind of interesting because we had so much talk of gigafactories this and gigafactory that. But I suppose for the local market is where they're supplying batteries, whereas the
exactly.
The local market in the U.S. is being supplied by their gigafactory there. So, yeah, interesting technology and fight over vertical integration. I find that interesting as well. It's like very much against what we saw in the past for a company like that. A slight segue here. Let's go to natural gas. I think it's an interesting story because it could be potentially, especially in the U.S., a part of this has been a very underpriced, if you ask me, compared to its economic value. A very underpriced commodity in the U.S. for quite some number of years. And it looks to me like we're working back into something resembling a normal range for natural gas. Is this just a temporary thing, you think, or are we just establishing a new price level for natural gas? And then down to the specific weather story, you think, as we're heading into winter?
Well, we are. I think we're most certainly seeing a pull in prices from exports, and we know that LNG exports has been rising quite so dramatically over the past 5 years, and it looks set to continue. That is because we see these phenomenal high prices in Europe and Asia. We talk about the U.S. gas trading just shy of $4 in Europe, but the equivalent is around $16. So that obviously does give an export window opportunity for U.S. gas. gas. So that will provide an underlying support. But at the same time, just like we are worried about the low stock levels in Europe, the same thing goes for the US, where the level of injection that come into storage over the summer period here, you can see that on slide 8, has been trailing what we've seen relatively 5 years. Not any dramatic development there yet. We can also see that on the March to April spread next year, which is basically when you get out of the winter into the spring from withdrawal to injection, the higher that spread goes, that obviously indicates the higher the stress in the winter months, because the markets worry about supply. So right now that's trading relatively benign, but in the short term, we showed a map early in the week from the NOAA about the potential cyclones building one after another, and that basically means we are into the hurricane season, and there's one cyclone right now which potentially could threaten the south coast, and if that happens, that could take out some power and reduce demand in the short term. So there's plenty of stuff going on, but I think underlying we are moving towards a more normalized situation, because we've got gas prices as a very, very in-demand commodity around the world.
Interesting stuff. All right. Now on the earnings front, Peter, we had some really key high-profile names, especially because of their performance the last few years, out reporting yesterday in the U.S. Take us through that and what you're looking at today in terms of earnings.
Yeah, we had earnings after the close from Salesforce and Snowflake. They both beat on revenue and earnings and lifted the guidance. Market was so-so on Salesforce and bit up share prices of Snowflake in extended trading. In Europe this morning, we have Delivery Hero, which is this fast-growing food delivery business. I've put in some of their fundamentals here on slide 9 in the insert, where you can see that they're growing very aggressively and the have experienced a lot of tailwind from the pandemic. They did 1.24 billion euros of revenue in the fiscal year of 19, and is expected for 2021 to be very close to 6 billion. So that's a very, very aggressive increase in top line growth. They have to have trouble making money. I think their excuse to the market is that they're just focusing on growth, which is fair enough. For the time being, look, the market value is still very aggressive, given that they are expected to lose almost €1 billion this year. I still have a little bit hard time seeing the strong moat a business like this can get in the future, but maybe I'm totally wrong. I've been wrong on Delivery Hero before, because I think it's a very simple business, but maybe there is a broader network effect, and if you grab the market, the market basically, and is the biggest player in this food delivery business, and maybe it can be quite profitable. I don't know. In the U.S. session, we will the key focus today for U.S. investors will be Workday and Peloton Interactive. Workday has been a darling throughout the pandemic. Peloton, high growth company within personal physical exercise. They have these treads where you can run, and there were some accidents. Terrible accidents that caused Peloton to stop selling their treads, but they have basically just restarted their selling of that, and they're doing all sorts of partnerships with Facebooks on Oculus and what have you. It's an interesting company. Why are you laughing?
Peloton, you're talking about treadmills, and then you mentioned Facebook's Oculus. I'm just imagining somebody running on a treadmill with an Oculus on their head. Not something I would recommend, just for your listeners.
Okay.
Sorry. Go ahead. I'll let you finish.
I get it. But it is an interesting company, because I don't think we have seen a company combining software and technology hardware with the physical exercising before to this extent. They also have a subscription service. So it's a very different type of breed this time around. So have a look at that one. A lot of interest from retail investors. And then XPeng, one of the emerging pure plays on electric vehicles in China, is also reporting today.
All right, good stuff. And let's go to the macro calendar. There's an awful lot there. I don't want to go through the list. It's too boring. But on slide 10, you get the overview there, maybe a little bit more interesting around ECB speakers. So I put those up for today, given that we had a bit of a reaction in European sovereign bond markets yesterday. And just want to pull out that we, and something not on the calendar on the longer term, the September 20th Canadian election, I'll be sure to add that in coming days. One interesting thing, or a couple of interesting things, the polls have tightened viciously suggesting Trudeau may have misstepped by calling this election, thinking that he was at the top of his popularity, because now it looks like the, or at least the polls suggest, that there's a dead heat in the support for this, the parties. So the two things he's mentioned recently, yesterday or the day before yesterday, it was a desire to implement a 2-year ban on all foreign purchases of Canadian real estate. Clearly that kind of country grappling with an ugly real estate bubble once again, that could have an ugly downside at some point further on once the cycle is complete, if it ever will complete. And then more interesting, perhaps, overnight, we saw a announcement of a desire to do a 3% surtax on all Canadian bank profits above 1 billion Canadians, which would take their tax rate to 18% relative to 15%. So this, and of course, blowback from the industry, et cetera, but this kind of populist from the left measures is quite interesting in the macroprudential approach on housing as well. So keep that in mind. And then also we have a 7-year auction today. It's coming at a bad time relative to the Fed chair out speaking tomorrow. Also given that we just saw a slightly weak 5-year, a bit of a move in yields. And this is, as Althea has told us, this is one of the least popular maturities for those interested in buying treasuries. So maybe some interest around that as well. Supposedly Jackson Hole getting underway late tonight, but it is the speech at 1400 GMT tomorrow from Fed Chair Powell that will be the big focus there, as well as, of course, the latest PCE inflation for July, which is the Fed's preferred inflation input. We'll see where things stand tomorrow and when we're back with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.